demand generation for me, when I think about it, is that guide during that awareness phase. And it's its own significant portion of the buyer journey.
It really is. Sometimes brand awareness starts with problem awareness. Mm-hmm. And you may just need to be the one who's out there pointing at the problem. It's okay for your prospective buyers to start wherever they are. It's not the end of the world if they don't even know that there's a problem or understand what's causing it or the severity of it or that it has a solution. Because, again, those are all steps that you can lead them through if you start with capturing their attention.
Hey, everybody. I'm Dacia Coffey.
And I'm Daisy McCarty.
And welcome to the Marketing Blender Show. Today, we are talking about how to make people want your product or service. We're talking about business-to-business demand generation. And who doesn't want the market demanding what you have to offer? So this is fun, and I think it's wildly misunderstood. So I'm excited.
It is. I can't tell you how often we'll have a conversation with a client about B2B demand generation, and they're like, no, leads. And everybody wants to talk about lead generation because that's the shortest path to revenue. But leads are whoever's wanting to buy your product or service right now.
Yes.
It doesn't fill the future pipeline. And we're all about resilience for businesses, not just immediate revenue. So you have to have the conversation about demand generation.
I love it. You know, it's so funny. A couple years ago, there was a client that when they first came to us, they actually said, we want you to do demand generation. And I was so shocked. I said, okay, do you mind telling me how you define that term? Because I, you know, just making sure we were on the same page. And it was a little bit of a loosey-goosey conversation, but they were headed in the right direction and ended up being a great client relationship. But it was surprising to have heard that language. Okay, so you had mentioned lead gen versus demand gen. Let's dive into what the heck are both of them and like how are they different?
I would define lead generation as identifying, connecting with, and persuading people who are ready to make a yes decision near term, short term, or right now. Anything outside of that is demand gen.
Yeah. So literally driving sales qualified leads.
Exactly. So if you're talking about B2B demand generation, that is identifying, tapping into, and encouraging more people to desire the thing that you're selling,
yeah,
whether that's a product or a service or an idea.
Yeah. Okay. So that brings up, I would assume that everybody watching is like, well, we want lead gen. But when do you know, like what symptoms are happening or what environment might be existing when you're going, okay, it's time to activate demand gen?
So I've worked with a lot of startups over the last 16 years. And very often when I'm working with innovators, they've come up with a brand new idea or concept that nobody knows about. It's not surprising in that situation to find that people don't want it because they don't know what it is. They've never even thought about the thing before. So there's not existing demand just floating around out there. There are not a bunch of leads ready to be harvested. People who already know they have a problem, already know they need a solution, and are ready to make a yes decision. They may have no idea at all of the problem that they have that needs to be solved. So I see this a lot with especially the technology startups where smart people have figured out really smart ways to solve problems, but they haven't made sure that people want to solve the problem or that people know what the problem is.
Yeah, I think that's such a great one because being a disruptor sounds really sexy, except that it's really freaking hard because no one knows that there's a new way to go about this. And so there's really an on-ramp to revenue that you have to build. Now, for me, the places that I've really identified or I have a tendency to activate demand gen is when revenue is separated from the actual user or end user of the product. So, for example, business to consumer. So, a consumer product manufacturer might sell to a big box store like a Walmart or a Target or a Costco, but the end user is their customer, right? So, if you can get the customers demanding that product, it influences the buyers so that they meet in the middle so that you can actually succeed in that revenue conversation. Some other ones are when you have a distributed sales force or for hire type of sales force, whether it is a distributor, which is what we're talking about traditionally, but in the B2B space, there's a lot of different sales business models. The other one that comes to mind that's really common in business is, you know, what we internally marketing jargon alert call AEC, or so that's architect, engineer, contractor. And then of course there's the owner, right? So each person has a significant role to play, but the money moves through different places. And so you're activating demand or you're piquing interest or you're reframing education in a place that is not central to who cuts your check when you issue an invoice.
We have one client right now where almost all of what we call lead gen for them is demand gen through architects.
Yeah.
And you know what? It works.
Yeah.
So understanding that sometimes it's a short pathway from demand gen to lead gen if your influencer and your decision maker are closely linked, or your influencer or champion has a lot of say over how things happen, it doesn't mean that you need to do demand gen for years and years in order to see a resulting increase in your revenue. You just need to be targeting the right people with the right value.
Well, and it's a great point because, you know, we're talking about prepping for the sale, but these don't necessarily have to be slow changes, because if you're saying something provocative enough and if you've structured your messaging to really nail and specialize in what that person is seeing in their environment, it can work faster than you think, because B2B, we're selling to really smart people. Like that, I think that needs to be said, is that these are educated people selling to other super educated people. It's just that we're busy. So if you nail that, nobody wants to flounder around in yesterday doing yesterday's, you know, nonsensical things. People are open to new ideas. You just really have to make sure that you get that messaging right.
For sure.
Okay, so are there times for you when lead generation is broken and that's another symptom of when demand gen needs to click? Or what are some of the other things that you might see where you're like, oh, okay, we need to, you know, we need to support that lead gen system?
Sometimes we'll see with lead generation that people come to the table unprepared for the conversation.
Oh, good one.
So they're an undereducated audience, or they have some significant misunderstandings about what the thing is, what it's solving, what they should be comparing it to, what is the position that that solution has in the market. So we'll see lots and lots of people coming into the system and they're not turning into sales qualified leads because they haven't been able to make the leap from one concept to another decision. And what I always like to say is you should never expect your target market to connect the dots.
Nope.
There should be one dot because you've already connected all the dots for them. Here's your dot. This is what you need to know. This is what you need to do. And so if you're seeing issues with people who all come into the lead gen pipeline, but they're too early, they're not ready for a decision, the marketplace isn't ready, excuse me, maybe there's an emerging idea, but it just hasn't caught on yet. I worked with a client a couple of years ago, and we did lead gen for them for a new technology concept. And we did an experiment for about 12 months. And we had done upfront SEO research into, you know, volume around specific keywords for this concept.
Yeah.
And at the end of the 12-month period, when we'd gone through this lead gen process, and they were just getting these leads that were interested in the idea, but they weren't interested enough to move.
Yes.
That at the end of that 12 months, the volume really hadn't shifted. It was showing us that this idea was too early to market.
Yep.
And they didn't have the runway to keep doing this for another few years until it caught on. They were going to have to let someone else be first in the market. And then once that demand was in the market, you know, cultivated by, you know, $1 billion company instead of, you know, a $2 million company, then they could go in and capture their portion of that lead generation. So while it's amazing to be first, you are going to be saddled with the demand generation portion of that go-to-market strategy. So you have to decide if you want to be first and take on the costs of that, or if you want to have a different position on the brand positioning ladder and carve out your own niche once someone else has already done that foundational work.
You know, it's interesting because depending on the severity of the problem that your product or your offering solves. If you, you know, sometimes you can win the be first even without a long mm-hmm. runway, but it requires niching down so far where you're like, these people have the most painful experience of this problem and are going to be the most likely to be early adopters. But wow, I mean, to your point, you've got to just really get that right so that it's not a lot of building for everyone else, you know, where it is not lead gen. So I absolutely love that. So, you know, we're talking, we've referenced a lot that demand generation is partially about education, especially around the innovator side. It also when around the influencer side as well. So one of the other ones that I've seen is talking about a risk that's undervalued, or there's a client that we're working with right now where there's literally misinformation around the installation of one of their competitors' products, and it's hurting them. And so we've been doing a lot of demand generation around when to use the different products and not slamming anybody, but just trying to clean up some troublesome shortcuts that the industry is taking. So kind of an interesting one, but we are activating demand gen for that in order to move the inappropriate misinformation. And then, of course, we're talking about visibility because you've got to get the word out there. So this is one of those places where we are talking awareness. And I think this is important because we get a lot of people saying, you need to get my name out there. And that's not always the case. Lead generation, as an example, is not necessarily getting out there. It's about getting in front of the people, as Daisy accurately said, that are ready to buy and are actively seeking a solution to their current scenario. But demand generation really is about getting out there and influencing people pre-research, pre-decision, so that you're framing up their point of view so that when they're ready to buy, they're going to be predisposed to choose you. So you really are starting to create a point, like a pathway that points back to you once they are ready. So visibility is the second component of demand generation in addition to education. Anything that comes to mind for you before we start getting into some additional examples, like anything else that we need to add on that one?
I think a lot of B2B companies do undervalue priming the market.
Yeah.
Because so many of the organizations that we work with are sales-led organizations. They're used to being the sales team going out there, virtual door knocking, whatever their method is. They're often used to it being the first time that a prospect has heard of their brand or their story. And the problem is that as more and more of the market is doing research up front, and as there's more and more competition, you need to stake your claim on your position early and often so that you don't face the situation of being behind the curve when you're trying to position your brand against competitors. So demand generation is it generating interest in the idea of your brand and the concept of your brand and your unique point of view or your perspective that you're selling to the market before you ever sell them your product or service. So focusing on priming your market to already know the things you want them to know and already think along the lines you want them to think, that's a lot of what demand generation is. It's not necessarily going from nobody wants a thing to now a whole bunch of people want a thing, but going from nobody knows about this thing to all of a sudden they have interest. It owns a space in their mind. And that's really what demand generation is about.
Are you a CEO of a business-to-business company? Maybe you're a sales leader or a salesperson, or maybe you're in business-to-business marketing. Well, if so, I wrote a book for you, and it's called Corporate Caffeine. Business-to-business marketing is different, but there are certain predictable fundamental principles that will help you unleash your organizational potential and fill your pipeline sustainably. So you can find my book on Audible, on Amazon, on barnesandnoble.com, or any of your favorite retailers. Hope you enjoy it, and I'd love to hear your feedback. I love that. And you know, you use a couple of words that really lead me to one additional point to maximize the effectiveness. You know, you're talking about unique point of view, you're talking about generating interest. And so when you can use creativity and attention getting and fun or delight or anything that makes people go, what? you know, and really pay attention. Not only are you doing demand generation, but now you're doing brand awareness, and it can make your brand name stickier so that you're priming the market not just for the reframe of what they're thinking, but you can actually start embedding a perception, a positive perception of your brand. And so I'm a big advocate of this stuff should be super interesting. And if at any way possible, intriguing or fun or zany or something, it needs to be authentic to your brand. However, being follow worthy makes a huge, huge difference, because then people want to keep paying attention.
And to your point, if you're doing this well, your competitors' demand generation efforts are actually just going to give you more visibility, because they'll be like, oh yeah, wait, isn't there that other company that does that? Yeah, they have the funny commercial about the such and such. So any effort that your competitors make to try and drive demand in the market is actually going to backfire on them and benefit you, because you have the best positioning for your brand, and you've been laying the groundwork of that brand awareness. So you're the one that they heard about first. So every time they're reminded about a problem or a potential solution, they come back to the first time they heard that and the coolest thing they heard about it.
Yeah, there's something to be said about being the most likable. But Daisy's using the language priming the market is just exactly beautiful language. That is literally what you're trying to do. And let me give you an additional nuance of this. So we are talking in demand gen pre-research phase of the buying cycle, the buyer's journey. And sometimes this can be a year before, 6 months before, a couple years before. So the timing is different. And here's the thing, we're talking about awareness. So generating awareness, maybe generating awareness around their problem, generating awareness around a risk, generating awareness around a new way to think about something or a new product or serving. So generating awareness, but awareness in and of itself is also a journey, because most people have to go through a journey of becoming aware that they have a problem, becoming aware that it is significant enough to engage change in their organization, that they are going to take action, then becoming aware of every single thing they could do to solve that problem. There's lots of you out there where this solution could be just don't do anything at all or use a spreadsheet, right? And then becoming aware of their narrowed focus on how they're going to investigate making a change, and then aware that you exist versus your competition. So awareness in and of itself is a journey. And I think this is really important, because demand generation for me, when I think about it, is that guide during that awareness phase. And it's its own significant portion of the buyer journey.
It really is. Sometimes brand awareness starts with problem awareness. Mm-hmm. And you may just need to be the one who's out there pointing at the problem.
Yeah.
The emperor has no clothes. Yeah. You know, this is an issue.
Yes.
Nobody's talking about it, but we're the one that are talking about it. So it's okay for your prospective buyers to start wherever they are. It's not the end of the world if they don't even know that there's a problem or understand what's causing it or the severity of it or that it has a solution. Because again, those are all steps that you can lead them through if you start with capturing their attention.
Oh my gosh. Absolutely. Okay, I think let's go ahead and start giving them some examples of what is demand generation. Like, what does that actually look like? So I think one that I think is super appropriate for business to business is providing research, right? So we were talking earlier that a lot of B2B buyers are incredibly educated people. And so giving them new information, trustworthy information, especially from a reputable source, or if you even were the one that gathered the data and put that together, but providing the market with something intriguing. If your buyer personas are that analytical, or they love to deep dive into the how and the why behind this, I love the research component and being the source of a new point of view or a new truth.
The fact is, if you're bringing something new to the market, you should have done research to figure out if it's something the market needs. So you have data. It's just a matter of packaging it and communicating about it. I think for some of our clients who have the best results with this, it is their own proprietary research. It doesn't have to be a massive data set. If you have data from a few hundred people or maybe 1,000 people in a B2B niche market, that's plenty for people to say, ooh, I wonder what other people like me think about this or are doing about this or are planning to do about this. People love that benchmarking where they can compare themselves to other people. And putting that into some kind of easily consumable report that helps people make decisions. Again, this is helping them make progress through that first stage of the awareness journey. So I love proprietary research, and it doesn't have to be something that you spend $500,000 on. But if you've been in a B2B company for long enough, you have unique insights and access to data that other people don't.
Yeah, it's harvesting what's right in front of you. People don't realize how much they actually have to use. So for me, then, if this is a scenario where they have something they can offer to the market, there's two natural components where they can go. So you can tap into analyst relationships, so companies like Gartner, where you're having other professionals share and engage with your market research, and that is a super high trust point of view, so you can really get some additional leverage. The other one, besides analyst relations, are public relations, and so again, engaging that third-party point of view, because you reached out to editors, you reached out to other thought leaders or influential publications or sources, and then they are engaging with your content and talking about it. So I love this because now you're really broadening your ecosystem, and this is very traditional demand gen that people don't realize to do in B2B.
Sure. And I would like to say one thing about the Gartner and Forrester of the world. You don't actually have to be in the magic quadrant of some kind in order to have influence and position in the market. As long as the analysts know about your brand or your solution before they learn about the competitors, in their mind, they're always going to be comparing, oh, solution X is like solution B that I heard about, you know, 6 months ago. So these are the copycats. Doesn't matter if they're a bigger company, more branding behind it, more money behind it. In their mind, they know that you're the first in the market, and there are ways you can leverage that information. Speaking of leveraging the power of others, shared thought leadership is a go-to for demand generation for a lot of our clients, especially if they have a highly technical product or service, and there are recognized experts in that field that people already listen to.
Yes, absolutely. And I feel like we can go in a couple different directions with this, right? Because I'm going to use a consumer word, God forbid, but they are influencers. I mean, if they're recognized experts, then you're tapping into influencers. And influencers, they generate their following, their audience, because of being in the know. So they do want people and other brands reaching out to them. I mean, that is the business that they are in. The other one that really I love and that goes under leveraged is existing partnerships. So people that you know that are adjacent to your industry, so they serve the same market, but they don't do any of the things that you do, there's some really great synergy to be talking about industry trends, what's happening in the world, you know, pains that people are experiencing. And so that thought leadership where you can create a dual halo effect back and forth and then reach both markets or both audiences in the same market, I absolutely love this. It's very low cost, very high value, and very, very effective if both brands or both thought leaders have a lot of rootedness in the market.
It is. So it's not fancy unboxing videos and paying somebody $500,000 to do an Instagram post, but it is absolutely influencer marketing.
But we will repurpose it on social media.
We will.
So that's the thing, is all of this that we're talking about is follow-worthy content. So put it out on social. Do not continue to put the same boring sales messaging over and over and over on your social media. Demand generation, by definition, if you're doing it well, is interesting. And so social media is a fantastic place. And then also commenting and sharing and really getting out there in the market. But social media, once you create some momentum around these other things, is an absolute no-brainer for how to make sure that you're extending and expanding the work that you're doing on demand gen.
So I'd like to talk next about the value of building your MQL base. So your marketing qualified leads, you know, they're not as exciting as sales qualified leads, but when you're doing demand generation, you want that bucket of marketing qualified leads to become as big as possible, because that's everything that's going to start flowing in, down into your sales qualified lead portion of your funnel once the demand reaches that point, once the awareness reaches that point, where people are ready to say yes and ready to start making that decision. So building marketing funnels that are specifically about brand awareness, that bring people into your ecosystem so you can continue marketing to them as they go through that process of awareness into consideration. That's incredibly important.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that one. So another one in a totally different direction is your calls to action, or even better, if you're speaking at a conference, the topic should be about that reframe that we're talking about right here. You can get so much more excitement and interest at a trade show if you're not just selling. So the topic, especially if you do have a speaking engagement, can really be a demand generation tactic where you're getting an entire audience not only thinking differently, but now talking to each other differently. Now you're saying something so interesting, they want to come back to your booth and chat with you about it. And then you can have resources that trigger a marketing funnel, like Daisy was mentioning, inside of your trade show booth that now are intentionally guiding people down that awareness journey. And you orchestrated it all because they want to, because they are demanding now your point of view and what you have to say. They're really engaged with it.
So I love the in-person speaking engagements. Those are by far the highest converting activity that you can do. But on the digital side, if you're looking for where is the emerging demand, where's the emerging interest, it's often found in long tail keywords. So if you're trying to work on demand generation, you may be looking at some lower volume but very specific keywords that are signaling that the market is starting to be interested in starting to learn about a specific problem. Often about the problem, not specific solutions. So these are usually not commercial or transactional keywords. They're usually informational. People are looking to educate themselves. So you want to be the first on the bandwagon to capture those long tail keywords that are indicating that people are interested in learning about a problem that they have. And that's the thing that's going to set you up as that demand starts to rise in the market, as your competitors start to come in behind you trying to capture the market share and mind share. You're already going to be well positioned to be the authority on answering those questions and helping people make progress.
What I love about long tail keywords and your point on that is you're giving people what they want. They are asking a question, and instead of answering the question that you want to, you're answering their question. So you're going where the buyer goes. And that makes me think, well, give them other types of content that they want. So people might be so surprised to hear that men are on Pinterest. And guess why? Because especially if they're in architecture or they're in any type of design environment, picture's worth a thousand words. So be on Pinterest. Or if your audience likes long content, be on YouTube. Do videos, do a podcast. So again, these are not lead generators, they're demand gen. So they are a slower burn, but it's because it's building your future pipeline and building your resilience. So just be follow worthy. Give people what they want and think more broadly about the tactics that you're using. Now, again, I just want to reiterate, we are talking about demand generation. It's in a very specific place of the buyer's journey. It's not lead generation. They are complementary. But don't set your marketer up for failure by misrepresenting what a podcast is going to do for your business, especially if you're trying to reframe a market and prime them to buy from you in the future.
I think I have just one more that I wanted to touch on. It's kind of an outside-the-box approach. But if you're in a B2B space where you have the opportunity to take a position on a board, for example, within your industry, you can have a lot of access to influencers through that position. You know, it's a volunteer position, you're there to serve, but also it gives you a voice and an aspect of influence that you might not otherwise have. So if you have a really niche industry or one where it's really difficult to get in touch with decision makers, or where people have, you know, low trust in the market in general, but you need high trust, sometimes that can be a worthwhile avenue to pursue.
I think that's such a great one, because that means you're, you know, using your heart of service for your industry and for the other people around you. And I believe that really great demand generation has that heart of service, because you're teaching something to people to create significant and real progress for them. Now, we hope that they are progressing closer to you, but typically this information is incredibly beneficial to the recipient and really does serve them where they're at because you're giving them a point of view that they did not have before. Okay, final thoughts on demand generation.
Yes. So anytime someone is starting on a long-term broad endeavor like this, just making sure they're taking inventory of what time is this going to take? What resources do I need to allocate? What is it going to take to build rapport? What is it going to take to generate authority? Understanding what's required to make that successful is very important.
Agreed. And thinking about it from a system standpoint, it's not just do this and then let them hang out there hoping they remember you and come back to you. There's a significant amount of consistency and thoughtfulness about how do you continue to help them take baby steps towards you in the future. So I think that's really, really important. And one of the other things I loved that you said was about timing. When will this start working? And even if you don't have a crystal ball for it, having the conversation that sets appropriate expectations that this is a resilience play, this is a expanding our pipeline, this is selling into 2025, 2026 and beyond. Yes, it will influence your current buyers now, but generally speaking, is not lead generation. So we're not talking about today's leads. We're talking about tomorrow's leads. So you guys, really fun, cool topic, a little bit more on the deep end of the pool, I think. Would love your questions. You may or may not know, we do a live every single month where we literally field your questions through the comments or ones that you've submitted to us throughout the month and give you the information that you want. So please submit those to us. And if you liked this, definitely hit that like button, but even more important, hit that subscribe button so we can keep bringing you this type of content. And we will see you next time on Word and Upward.